Ezra chapter 3 and verse number 1. And when the 7th month was come, that was a big month in Israel's history, the blowing of the trumpets and the different feasts and so on. It was often the start-off month. When the 7th month was come and the children of Israel were in the cities, the people gathered themselves together as one man to Jerusalem. Verse 2. Then stood up Jeshua, the son of Josedech, and his brethren the priest, and Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and his brethren, and builded the altar of God of Israel to offer burnt offerings thereon, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. And they set the altar upon his bases, for fear upon them because of the people of those countries, and they offered burnt offerings, and thereon unto the Lord even burnt offerings morning and evening. They kept also the feast of the tabernacles, as it is written, and offered daily burnt offerings by number, according to custom, as the duty of every day required. And so on. Over to verse number 9, for the sake of time. Verse number 9. Then stood Jeshua, same man again, with his sons and his brethren. Now notice who else comes along here. Kadmiel and his sons and the sons of Judah. Together, and if you look into your margin, most margins will give it, as one man, or as one, to set forward the workmen in the house of God and the sons of Hanadad with their sons and their brethren the Levites. And when the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, they set the priests in their apparel with trumpets, and the Levites and the sons of Asaph with cymbals to praise the Lord after the ordinance of David, king of Israel. Verse 11. And they sang together, or in the context, they sang as one man, by course, in praising and giving thanks unto the Lord, because he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. Now, they had a lot to do yet. There's a tremendous Herculean task before them, but listen, the content of their song, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever toward Israel. And all the people shouted with a great shout when they praised the Lord because of the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid, and they're just at the foundation and so on. Second reading, please, back in 2 Samuel chapter 23. I am not sure just if I'll get back to this, but I want to read it to you. 2 Samuel chapter 23, please, verse number 8. Second Samuel 23, verse number 8, these be the names of the mighty men whom David had. The Tachbonite that sat in the seat, chief among the captains. The same was Adino the Ezonite. He lift up his spear against 800 whom he slew at one time. I want to speak to you this afternoon about two men. First man I want to speak about is this man, Jeshua. He was a man that stood up because he had to. The second man that we read about at the beginning of David's list of mighty men, and I would rather just refer to him as the Tachbonite because it's a much easier pronouncing that than it is his real name and the name that follows. But it says concerning this man of the Tachbonite that sat in the seat, chief, it says, among the captains, and he lifted up his spear against 800 men. I want you to notice, here is a man that sat down, and he didn't have to. So putting the two together, we have a man that stood up because he had to. We have another man that sat down, and he didn't have to. If I don't get to the last one, let me say this. Sometimes it takes as much energy and power and wisdom and maturity to keep my seat than it does to leave it. This man had every reason to stand up and say, wait a minute now. Wait a minute. Who around here took on 800? Who among here rose to what I did? Chief of the captains. But here was a man that was deeply respected because he kept his seat. Listen, dear brother, dear older brother, let me encourage you this afternoon. What I teach here, I would teach everywhere. Because of physical or obvious responsibilities of moving among God's people is no longer apparent in you, doesn't mean you've lost your usefulness. Because in your wisdom, you have stepped back and said, oh, Here's a younger man here. Let him be helping here. Let him be doing this. Does not mean you will be less appreciated. Maybe less seen. Just as much used of God. I came in the latter part. I didn't intend to mention this. I came in the latter part of Mr. Lennon McIlwain's labors in Nova Scotia. I still think of myself as Joe Jr. But as Joe Jr., Mr. McIlwain used to look me out at some of those large conferences, and he'd say, "We expect to hear from you this afternoon." I said, "Mr. McIlwain, these are your converts. This is your work, among others." "No, no, no," he says. "I will be keeping my seat." When Lennon McIlwain moved to Toronto to the home there in Bethany, I can tell you there was a tremendous presence that was missed by a man that hadn't been on a platform for years. Nobody told Lennon he had to sit down. Now, my children have gone different. They've told me, "Listen, you don't have to worry, Dad. You haven't a worry in the world. We see something coming up, we're going to sit you down and we're going to..." Kindly, they said, "Staple your suit jacket to the chair. You're going nowhere." So there you know where I'm coming from. But I'm saying that to encourage you. I am looking into brethren that I've stood on this platform and ministered before for years. You're not young men today. I'm not quite as young as I used to be, even though I might like to think at times I am. I want to encourage you from the bottom of my heart today that your presence here, your presence in that assembly, in which God has used you, even if it means retiring from responsibilities and moving among the people of God, is a wise move. Let's come back to this man, Jeshua. I say a man that stood up because he had to. It's interesting. Just interesting to notice the order that is given in this chapter. I want you to notice that before a man could stand up and be a man like Jeshua, there had to be unity amongst these people. That's why I emphasized in verse number 1 and verse number 9 and verse number 11, they were gathered together as one man. It's interesting that when it comes to the deliverance of God's people from slavery, out of the land of Egypt, it is God giving the commandment. And the commandment coming down from Moses and Aaron to his people. That his people are going to be with a strong hand taken out of this land. They're going to be delivered from this terrible, terrible captivity. Slavery, rather. But when you come to the captivity, there's no such commands that are given. So what is it that brings a man like Ezra and a man like Nehemiah and a man like Jeshua here and men of the house of Judah and men like Kadmiel? What is it that brings them here? In a book that likely spans a period of 90 years, this would be traced back to a man by the name of Daniel reading God's word, just exactly what we've been hearing at this conference, and coming to the realization that God is going to bring people out of this captivity. And they're going to go back to the place of the name. And they're going to build on the ruins of what is left. Now we read through it, and I speak for myself. We read through it so casually and so comfortably. We're not standing with this dear man. He didn't have the tools, the equipment that we have today. And I'm talking about in a modern world of building and rebuilding and construction. And to look over the ruin and the devastation of this city, and to have the heart to even think of rebuilding it. But he would do it. Am I speaking to someone today and you say, "But the ruin that's been done in our company"? Maybe you're like a sister that came to me one time at a conference, miles from here, and she said, "You know, we used to be a very good number here, Brother McCandless, but our brethren couldn't get along." That's sad. I know nothing. I'd only been there once. Never had the occasion to go back there. That was her commendation. That was her comment as far as what I saw, what I would witness there. But here's a man, Ezra, and Ezra has taken the lead. This man, Jeshua, and that's the man I want to speak of, speak about today, a man that stood up that didn't have to, could have said, well, listen, now Ezra's doing it all. He's really handling things here and whatever. If he stands, I'll stand. Is that how you feel, brother? Is that how you feel, sister, when it comes to your assembly? That, well, you know, if so-and-so would stand up and say, hey, listen, in a very practical way, on Lord's Day morning, how about standing on your feet with a few words to worship God? When last did you do it, brother? When last, sister, did you encourage your husband to take part like that? Don't set before your children a dumb priest. Let them see an active priest in the home and in God's house as well. But so often, isn't that really the order of the day? Come on, young brethren, you know. And we've got young brethren, thank God, they're right here in the audience today. And they have, whatever others may think or may not think, they have rose to the moment. They have arisen to the moment. They said, no. There are men like Jeshua. But there was a condition, there was a unity that was produced here. Now you'll notice that these people had gathered themselves together. Now I have not questioned that God, by the power of His Spirit, had not brought them back. Had not delivered them from that terrible captivity. But there was a responsibility on their part. On their part, as we have in the Corinthian epistle. To be gathered together. It's one thing to be gathered together, it's another thing to be gathered together as one man. You got a company that is gathered together as one man, it will produce. It will produce men that can stand up. When the scene is difficult and even dangerous, you will scare our young brethren. You won't encourage them to stand up. Notice what this man, Jeshua, by doing that, the son of Jesse, and his brethren, and the priest, and Zerubbabel, one man that stands up. Others did the same thing. I shared the funeral of my aunt, Jean McCandless, 92 years of age, less than a month ago. And the only girl in the family. What's she going to do? You're not going to go against your parents, are you? Surely. If they're going, wouldn't it be the natural thing to go? No. No, she didn't. You know what she did? She's close to 6 foot, but I'll tell you what she did. She did what a lot of sisters have done that are in this audience this afternoon. She stood up. She didn't contradict her parents. I heard nothing of a home conflict. I was likely maybe even too young to know about it than a good thing. Far as I know, and I have not checked it out, I don't think any of her brothers tried to influence her either. Mom and Dad went one direction. She stayed in the other. At her funeral, aged veteran overseers from the Hyber Assembly came to me at the grave with tears in their eyes. And you know what they said? Thank God for your Aunt Jean. Good for you, sister. Come on, brethren, let's admit it. Would the family really be here if you had your way? Cut out of sorts with the brethren? Once you stood up? But Mum stood up. Well, she kept her place. And she said, my dear, we can't leave. This assembly needs us. God's placed us here. We can't leave. Have you ever expressed that thanksgiving to your wife? If you haven't, please do it. You say, well, that's never really happened. Well, listen, brethren. Could you today, my, what a day this would be. What a memorable Garner Villa conference. If tonight before you retire, if your wife is with you, you could turn to her and say, thanks, dear, for standing with me. Times when you felt you were run over, roughshod by others. Times when likely you would have had justifiable means for leaving, packing in and going. But you couldn't. And somebody stood up in the family. I am not appealing just to younger men, although I'm doing that. To the middle aged, although I'm doing that. Or older, I'm appealing to every heart here today. If there was ever a day where we needed men of Jeshua character that would literally influence men like Kadmiel. Notice, When you get there, not only does Kadmiel stand up, but his son stand up with him. That must have been a tremendous thing. It's a wonderful thing when you can see that in a family. Hope some of you that have seen that joy, don't look critical on others maybe that haven't had the same joy, but you're just so thankful to God. And people say to me sometimes about children, and I say, well, they say, they're not all in heaven yet. You know what they said? One brother said it wisely. He said, you aren't either. He's right. Better men than I'll ever be. I believe this, brother. Better men than I'll ever be that once stood. I thought would never go down. Aren't among us anymore. Now, I'm sorry that I have to come as close to home as I am right now. But I break bread with their wife. And the man's been gone for 15 or 18 years. Once an overseer in the assembly. But Mom said, no. She stood up. Come back to this man, Jeshua, for a minute. So, you know, could you just stop for a minute, somehow capture heaven looking down on this scene? I mean, as far as God is concerned, here's 42,000 people. Precious to Him. So few, so insignificant amongst the numbers and the nations of the earth. How true the words of that prophet, as we call him, when he said, from the top of the rocks I have seen him and I behold him. And he says, lo, the people shall dwell alone and shall not be reckoned among the nations. They will be a distinct and different people. And really, as Ezra gives us the list here of 7,000 so on servants and horses and mules and camels and donkeys and so on. Can I say to you that the unity, the oneness of this company was as important to God as that foundation ever being laid? The work that God was doing in them was far greater than the work that they were going to do for God. I find it significant that the focus here is put upon the altar. Notice they set the altar upon its basis. What? You'd say, hey, listen, come on, let's get on with this building here. This is, what about the wall? Well, that's Nehemiah's work. And really, here's two men that are, Ezra, a scribe, and Nehemiah, a butler, and they're trying to rebuild? You say they're totally out of their class, not God's class. They weren't out of that. And they're going to work together. But why the emphasis upon the altar? Brethren and sisters, you don't need me to tell you today. The altar spoke of divine presence. And it was the appreciation of divine presence that forged this company together. And their appreciation of it would fix them together. And keep them together. I want to say something, that if the appreciation of divine presence among us as those that gather to the name of the Lord Jesus will not keep me there, the capable tongue of a well-meaning overseer or preacher won't do it either. Just be a matter of time and I'll be gone. That's what they had to get a hold of. That was the sight. That there was appreciation of the one that altar spoke of and all that it represented. It kept them there. Spoke of the sacrifice that we're hearing about this morning. And what they were going to do. Notice the thrust. You see, brothers and sisters, that's our difficulty. The real issue at times has got diffused. When the apostle writes to the Ephesian believers and he says, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. Interesting that word endeavoring is use speed, make effort. Don't allow something to come in that will divide it. It goes further than that. The word keep, it's watch with care. Watch with care. Interesting when the psalmist speaks of the behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. He starts with that anointing oil that will flow down. He says, the head to the beard. Notice it starts in the head. You see, that's what will bring disunity amongst God's people. Wrong thinking. How very quickly and unwisely and wrongly, in my mind and in your mind, we form assessment of other believers as to what they're thinking about us or what they think of us. And we're just so wrong. We're just so wrong. Jimmy Durant, likely one of the best entertainers in his day a few years back, very well paid, very capable entertainer, was asked to go and entertain for some World War II veterans. Didn't want to go. He said he didn't want to come out and say, I'm just not interested in going before those old men and trying to make them happy or make their day. He didn't know how to get out of it. He said, listen, finally, he said, I'll go, but it's going to be short, okay? Just tell them I can only be there for 10 minutes. That's all I can give them. Well, they agreed. They said, fine, if you can come for 10 minutes, Mr. Durant, you come. That large number of World War II veterans gathered together. Mr. Durant came out on the stage. And those that could stand, there was a standing ovation. That they could hardly get stopped. And he hadn't done anything yet. He just looked at them. They kept clapping and cheering. And he went well beyond his 10 minutes. When he came backstage, some of his entourage said to him, hey, what's up? What happened to the 10 minutes? Maybe it's like some preachers. And, you know, we just won't go there. He said, listen, just come out here and see, and let me show you what I saw. They said, what'd you see? He's come on. They were still clapping. He said, see that front row down there? Down there on two seats were two aged veterans, both missing the opposite arm. And in unison, the arm they had left raised over their head, were clapping together. Jimmy Durant broke down and cried. That's unity. That's using what's left, brethren. That might be using what we don't have, but it's using what is left. How important it is to God. But you notice these people? I came from a conference not that long ago, and the man that was preaching, I think 50% of his message was telling us about all the things he could tell us, but he didn't have time to tell us. It was driving me nuts. So I'm not going to do that any further. These men are interested in building up. Building up. I wouldn't be here, nor would these men. Nor would you be here. If there hadn't been a generation in Iowa and other states, Wisconsin and across the country and around the world, if there had not been men that knew what it was to build up. No, they didn't have the tools that we have today. But they knew God. And they built up. I stood in the Ottawa airport last time I was through it. Like most of our major airports on this continent, going through major reorganizing and renovating. I watched a crane operator operating a large crane, sitting there with a wrecking ball on the end of it, with hydraulics, and literally bashing down those brick walls. Hey, he knew nothing of a plumb line. He knew nothing of picking up individual bricks and placing them where they belonged. He knew nothing of the mixing of the mortar and even the construction of the place. There he sat with his little ponytail in the great big caterpillar crane, and he was just bashing it down. You know what all he was operating? It was a joystick. You know, some that have known what it is to labor a little in the building up, using the plumb line when it comes to the assembly. And those difficult tasks at times are so slow to even tear it down. Breaks their heart. Someone that knows nothing of it, nothing about it. They can come in and say, yeah, they got a new way of doing things. They'll knock it for whatever. And they know nothing about the labor of it. Nothing about it. But what can they do? I mean, I watched that boy. I don't know how long it took him to learn how to operate that piece of equipment. Modern and all that. He was knocking down. It took long for it to stay. But the next day it was clean flat. That's sad when that happens. So many ways that it can... Let me ask you today, which crew are you working with? Oh, you say, well, I'm kind of neutral. No, you're not. Oh, you say, I never think of tearing it down. I know it's God's assembly. My granddad... No, that's not a good enough reason. It's because this is the Lord's place. This is the place of divine presence. This is the place that I appreciate. I know we're very simple, and I know I'm very conservative, and I know I'm this, and I know I'm that. Brethren, I'm going to say to you very plainly this afternoon, and you may not all agree, tough. This book here that I'm reading to you out of, I have 9 other translations and versions that I will read from and I will quote from. This is the book I'm content to use, it that we know to be the authorized version. When it goes out the door, you can send this great little hymn book right out the door with it. I'm not trying to be sarcastic, but listen. If we are as spiritual as we might think we are, where's the hymns of worship we wrote in the last 50 years? How many were written in the last 100 years? We thank God for His Word. We appreciate it. Let me say that if you're reading a version or translation that is making you a better Christian, keep at it. I'm talking about something public. I'm talking about when we're gathered together. But we appreciate this. And the truth of it. And the simplicity of it. We're not broke down, so why does it need to be fixed? It doesn't. You say, well, how'd you weave this in? Notice what they're doing in verse number 9. They're singing together. Singing together. I know that you thank God for His Word. I know that. Can I ask you something else? What would be wrong with bowing your knees and thanking God for some of the dear people of God that often with a broken heart gave us this hymn book and the hymns that are in it? Take time to read some of the history of them. You'll appreciate that book like maybe you didn't before. Thank God for men like Jeshua, men like Kadmiel. This thing spread. No one wants to build. Singing. And they got a foundation and an altar. You say, well, I couldn't sing until it was finished. Then you never would have sung. You never would have sung. Do you know what these people saw? They had vision. They saw something coming back here that was God's mind for God's people. And they couldn't stay any longer. And the result of it is that they would stand up. That's what this man, Jeshua, did. And they would build together. And then in verse number 11, it says, and they would sing together. Now, just this. Notice that, first of all, you've got, they gathered themselves together, verse 1, as one man to Jerusalem. That was something they did. When you come down further, we've got verse 9. Then Jeshua with his sons and his brethren and Kadmiel, they stood up. That's something others would do. And when we come to verse number 11 and they sang together, it was something they were all doing. How did it start? How did it start? I said, start with Ezra. Yeah? Start with Ezra. Do you know how else it started? It started with a man that wasn't afraid to stand up. Listen, I'm not encouraging anybody to go home and be a difficulty to their brethren. I'm not encouraging you to go back to your local assembly and say, yeah, right. Brethren are all sitting on their hands here. I'm standing up. Listen, not at all. You know me better than that. You know this book better than that. I am asking you, I'm challenging your heart today to be a Jeshua, to have spiritual desire to work in unity with your brother and your sisters, and I'm encouraging sisters too, if you have to, let the moment come. Stand up for His honor and for His glory.